You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the November 2022 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Lizzo on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the editor's letter from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief. When the Dobbs decision came down in June, I felt the urge to speak to people who had fought so hard for abortion rights before 1973. Those who first envisioned an America in which abortion access was a federal protection. As it happens, I had recently met Gloria Steinem at an event for CARE, the humanitarian organization where I serve as co-vice chair of the board, and we had talked, among other things, about the art and fun of magazine making. At various points in her storied career, Gloria has been an activist, organizer, writer, leader, and a founding editor of Ms. Magazine, which marks its 50th anniversary this year. So I was thrilled to invite her to be a special contributing editor to this issue, in which we highlight artists and advocates across generations who fight on the new front lines of reproductive justice, who advance feminist causes through their work, and who, by their own sheer excellence, carve out indelible space for women's voices in American culture, including, of course, Gloria herself. Because COVID was still a ubiquitous presence during our planning, we weren't able to reconstruct an in-person version of the editorial meeting you'll see in our Ms. retrospective. But Zoom sufficed. Gloria provided historical context, sometimes dire, for example, that assaults on reproductive rights characterized the Nazis' rise to power. But she was also calm, action-oriented, and optimistic, all of which proved prescient when Kansans turned out in August to vote overwhelmingly to secure abortion access in their state. Ahead of the November elections, we hope that our focus helps put into relief the stakes not only of congressional and gubernatorial power and pipelines to the presidency, see Gabe Sherman's reporting on Ron DeSantis, but also of the influence and impact of local lawmakers and advocates on the ground. I believe that art is formed in a crucible, and in times of political and cultural stress, it's wise to look to our visionaries, those with the capacity to imagine the world differently, to recast its characters or change its palette. It's not about chasing escape, but about opening the mind to what's possible. Annie Leibovitz's portfolio of women artists, from legends Faith Ringgold and Cindy Sherman to New Guard Micheline Thomas and Amy Sherald, reminds us that as much as our identities may be circumscribed politically, they are also fluid, shaped by the images toward which we gravitate. One thinks of Sherald's mesmerizing portrait of Michelle Obama, or in Sherman's case, by the range of people we may find ourselves liberated to play. Lisa Robinson's interview with our enthralling cover subject, Lizzo, underscores the role popular art can play in navigating troubled times. If her music is joyful, Lizzo tells us, if it is optimistic, it's not because things are easy, but because they are difficult. That's why we love her, and why her songs strike such a chord. And now this from contributing editor Gloria Steinem. A call to hope, staying resilient for the battles ahead. At any given moment, there are reasons to hope and reasons to fear. There is a positive and negative outcome of whatever is going on right now. For instance, a global pandemic is still with us, and no one would have wished it. Yet this pandemic has produced a shared consciousness, a concern for events and people around the world that is a first in my long lifetime. Whether there is an outbreak in Australia or Africa, New Delhi or New York, pandemics render vulnerable anyone and everyone on spaceship Earth. Wherever there is a cure or prevention, danger or safety, it is only a matter of time and human choices before it reaches all of us. Yet to create positive choices, there has first to be a sense of hope and possibility. Some positive thinking comes from knowledge, which is why people trust physicians. We recognize, honor, and seek out wisdom that has come from experience. We are influenced by the outcomes of the past, even as we go right on hoping for the miraculous. At the other end of the spectrum, there is a lack of hope. This crippling fear may come from knowing of no good outcomes, a personal feeling of being deprived, or just from a habit of catastrophic thinking. The hopeless also may be suffering from a cultural version of Stockholm syndrome or battered woman syndrome. The captor gets to decide who exists. At another extreme, there is in some Native American cultures a spirit of laughter, a being who is neither male nor female. Because it is said that laughter breaks into the unknown. If you cannot laugh, you cannot pray. You can force someone to believe they are in love if they are kept dependent on another human's fate for long enough. But you cannot force anyone to laugh, really laugh. And because laughter cannot be compelled, it is a proof of freedom. So do not allow anyone to take away your hope or your laughter. It is an imagination of the positive that is the first step toward creating it. When I am asked how I still keep going, and I'm asked that a lot at my age, I say it's because action is infinitively interesting. You might be someone who knows the law and can help navigate legislatively. You might be a healthcare worker who can provide care and support regardless of what the law says. Or you might be really good at social media and spreading information and friendship. It's rare that any one of us can solve a big problem, but collectively we can do anything. As Emily Dickinson wrote, "Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all." Recently, I received a letter from a 22-year-old Texan who was feeling hopeless in these times, especially living in a post-Roe world where access to reproductive justice and choice have been denied. So I will tell you what I told her. Never mind what's happening at the top. Change grows from the bottom up, like a tree. If you treat others as you would want to be treated, if you do what you love and say what you mean, you will create the revolution you want to see. Now for some of the contributors to the November issue. Peter Van Ochtmel, The Aftermath. The end has returned to the beginning, says photographer and author Van Ochtmel, who chronicles post-9/11 America. Returning to Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover was the culmination of decades of work. Van Ochtmel's most recent book, Sorry for the War, was published in 2021. Thelma Golden, Forward Vision. As director and chief curator of the Studio Museum in Harlem, Golden has cemented the institution as a global leader in art and innovative education. My work is unequivocally indebted to my breakthroughs. The breakthroughs made by these incredible women, she says, of our portfolio subjects. Patty Wilson, The Lizzo Show. Working with Lizzo was phenomenal. She brings a real presence to the set and was eager to get into a full look to create a moment, says Wilson, the renowned stylist behind our cover story. It didn't hurt that she broke into song during shooting. The acoustics were perfect. A. Kirsten Mullen, the Queen Mother, a folklorist and the founder of Artifactual, Mullen calls her deep dive on Queen Mother, Audley Moore, an act of demystification and celebration. The foremost reparations advocate in the 20th century has both an enigmatic and commanding presence, she says, and deserves more attention. Campbell Addy, The Lizzo Show. Lizzo's energy was amazing, and she really gave, says Addy, who met the singer almost 5 years ago at the beginning of his career. The two shared a special bond on set, and Addy gifted her a copy of his debut monograph, Feeling Seen. Lisa Robinson, The Lizzo Show. Lizzo has a remarkable story, says Vanity Fair contributing editor Robinson, who profiles our cover star. Robinson, who has interviewed hundreds of musicians, adds, I was especially impressed by her political beliefs, passion for music, and humor. She has a laugh that just takes over the room. Thank you. She's all that. Musical heroine, dystopian warrior, Disney princess. What can't Rachel Zegler do? As interviewed by Brit Hinemuth. After landing the iconic role of Maria in Steven Spielberg's Oscar-winning West Side Story, then 17-year-old Rachel Zegler kept climbing. In the coming months, she has leading roles in the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, DCEU Comics' Shazam! Fury of the Gods, and Disney's Snow White remake. I've been a huge fan of everything that I've gotten to do so far, the New Jersey native says. I have to believe in manifesting. Zegler's dad works in construction, and her mom worked in camera film sales. We make adoption jokes all the time. Where did I get my singing from? Awards season had its fair share of unforgettable memories. My custom Dior dress ripped at the Critics' Choice Awards as I was leaving. Lady Gaga taps me on the shoulder. I can't let you leave like that. So she and Alana and Esteyam are MacGyvering a safety pin to save my dress. And then I kind of just hobbled out in complete shock. She just wrapped Snow White. People are making these jokes about ours being the PC Snow White, where it's like, yeah, it is, because it needed that. It's an 85-year-old cartoon, and our version is a refreshing story about a young woman who has a function beyond someday my prince will come. She learned she'd been cast as Anthea, a superhero goddess in the Shazam sequel, from director David F. Sandberg personally. I answered a little too quickly and casually, thinking he was my postmate. Her character in Songbirds and Snakes, Lucy Gray Baird, is a singer who uses her voice as protest. She plants the seed, in my opinion, for what Katniss becomes. She's dealt with controversy. I don't think there could be a more stressful press tour than what I had to do for West Side Story. Having to answer for a lot of cultural questions, her character is Puerto Rican while Zegler is Colombian-American, and at the same time, answer for why I got cast as a Disney princess that isn't associated with my skin color, it was bizarre. Up next, she hopes to make her Broadway debut, either in original material or a dream revival of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812. Double Time. In their 10th studio album, Crybaby, twin sister act Tegan and Sarah channel and heal teenage trauma through an adult lens. Tegan Quinn shares some of her inspirations with Vanity Fair. Dyke by Catherine Opie. Opie's photography was the inspiration for the visuals on this album. The images capture pain and beauty carried on the body. They're unfussy and arresting. What We Do in the Shadows, FX. I'm absolutely obsessed with the TV show. Emotional vampire is solidly burrowed in my lexicon, and I'm happier for it. The show is brilliant and funny and strange. My favorite things. Flower of Devotion by Dead. The 2020 album was an obsession while writing Crybaby. They made me want to be in a band again. And bassist vocalist Emily Kempf made me want to howl and play bass. Body Work, a comprehensive new book of photographs, showcases the coolly carnal vision of Stephen Klein by Madison Reed. In the photo, Madonna, photographed by Stephen Klein in 2006, as shown in his namesake monograph, Out from Phaedon. The heel of a patent leather stiletto pierces an apple. A model in nylons and a neat red bob, surrounded by hooks heavy with raw meat, shivers in a warehouse. Stephen Klein, Phaedon, the photographer's first monograph, drips with his signature juxtapositions. Sexuality and danger amid the bourgeois and industrial. Klein is an image maker in every sense of the term, especially when the sense is celebrity. Who else could have created the instantly iconic images of Brad Pitt's bare Fight Club era buttocks? Lady Gaga in a red latex nun habit. Kim Kardashian wearing nothing but a Prada bag. One of Klein's most fruitful collaborations has been with the queen of iconography herself, Madonna. It is rare to meet another human who is tuned into your frequency, she tells Vanity Fair of their partnership. That is why our collaborations are often disturbing but always epic. Their first project, the 2003 exhibition, put a bizarro twist on her modern dance background, Ecstatic Process. Since then, the pair has created magazine editorials, ad campaigns, and a series of films, including for her Reinvention and Confessions World Tours. 20 years later, we've managed to do so many projects together, Klein says. We start out with a core idea, and then we execute it in a big way. One such project, a 43-image editorial series created early in their working relationship, began with what Madonna describes as a mutual passion for horses, mysticism, great art, and hot sex. Discussing 239 Madonna, Hollywood, California, 2006, pictured here, Klein describes the image of Madonna's muscular back as a study not only of anatomy but of character. We're both very disciplined people, but there's also freedom within the discipline. In jumping a horse, he says, as in their shared artistic process, there's a lot of planning and there's a thrill also. I think we both like things that give you an adrenaline rush and going to dangerous places.
Thank you.
Here's what's trending. Destiny Manifest. From shimmering eyeshadow to frosted accessories, return to a world where everything that glitters is likely diamante, and the club is jumpin'. In the photo, Destiny's Childs, Kelly Rowland, Beyoncé, and Michelle Williams attend the inaugural MTV Icon special, Fetting Janet Jackson, an Audie's Mad Lib if there ever was one. In the photos, bling ring, Tiffany & Company bracelet, Tom Ford pants, Byredo liquid lipstick and vinyl, 16 Arlington jacket, Connor Ives top, Coach bag, Chopard and Mariah Carey ring, trademark beauty Sunny Styler hair iron, Tommy Collection bucket hat, Rodarte sweater, Diesel jacket, Manolo Blahnik mules, Stila Stay All Day Artistics eyeliner, Charlotte Tilbury hypnotizing pop shot eyeshadow, Lancome Idole Eau de Parfum Nectar, Maria Tash navel ring, Chantecaille sheer glow rose face tint luminizer, Alualia skirt. And this from Dora Fung, made to measure, with photograph by Sarah Van Rye, Chanel Orserie Premier Iconic Chain Watch in yellow, gold, and diamonds. In 1987, a star was born into the Chanel family. The house's first timepiece, dubbed the Premier, sported an octagonal gold case around a black lacquer dial that mimicked the shape of the famous No. 5 bottle stopper, both inspired by the Place Vendôme, while its leather and chain strap mirrored that of the brand's iconic quilted bags. During a reign of power suits and miniaturized men's watches for women, it served as a refreshing take on feminine strength. Now, 35 years later, the original Chanel Premier returns for an encore, featuring 625 diamonds along five 18-karat gold chain bracelets, each interlaced with shaved black velvet. As always, the face is sans numeral or indices, timeless on all counts.
Thank you.
On to dining, a rare treat. A Parisian den of delicacies, Caviar Caspaia, expands its purview to New York. And if it's anything like the original, The Rich and Famous will follow, by James Reginato. Opening photo. Actually, opening illustration by Jaya Nicely. Caviar Caspaia opens a U.S. outpost at Manhattan's Mark Hotel this fall, and the mark is shown in the background, and in the foreground, a table with various fancy appetizers. Like its signature dish, a twice-baked potato heaped with the good stuff, Caviar Caspaia feels at once cozy and decadent. Since 1953, sophisticates and gastronomes have been flocking to this institution's Parisian mothership, a clubby, wood-paneled second-story space above the Place de la Madeleine, not far from where Russian émigré Arkady Fixon began the business in 1927. The fashion world's high rollers have in particular embraced Caviar Caspaia. It's the place to entertain tastefully, but lavishly. A spud runs between 98 and 1,083 euros, depending on the caviar. The rest of the menu features lots of smoked fishes, with an emphasis on salmon and other seafood. During couture, or ready-to-wear weeks, the place heaves with the likes of Giambattista Valli, Tom Ford, Betty Catrou, Naomi Campbell, Valentino, and Karine Rothfeld, ensconced on aquamarine mohair banquettes, when they are not table-hopping, a Caspaia custom. Jay-Z and Beyoncé have been known to duck in when they're in town. So did one actor currently in the news for his courtroom travails. On a sultry night last summer, the star and 30 members of his entourage arrived at 11:30 and sailed on till 3 a.m., according to a spy. Alas, Caviar Caspaia CEO Ramon Marcron isn't blabbing. What happens at Caviar Caspaia stays at Caviar Caspaia. Discretion is our number one asset, he says. We never say no, or at least we always try to find a way to please the customer. There are many, many stories, he continues teasingly. If these walls could talk, they would have an endless amount of stories. Thank God they can't. Next illustration shows Caspaia's signature dish, a loaded baked potato with creme fraiche and roe. This month, the enchantment is coming to Manhattan when the brand opens its first permanent New York location in the Mark Hotel. Earlier this year, when a ground floor space in the Upper East Side landmark and Met Gala staging ground became available, Isaac Sinbahar, a co-owner of the property, acted quickly. Caviar Caspaia has always been one of my favorite restaurants in Paris, he says, so I called Ramon. That corner, 77th and Madison, is the perfect location, agrees Macron, who has been spearheading a global expansion of the brand. Doors are now or soon to be open in Dubai, Sao Paulo, Los Angeles, London, and Saint-Tropez. We keep the DNA, but we adapt the vibe and menu to every location. Madison Avenue will be very Caspaia, but tailor-made for New York, the CEO says. As at the brand's other locations, the bill of fare will include eggs with caviar, pasta with caviar, blinis with caviar, salmon, and more. You can also dine with a clear conscience. None of the house staple comes from Russia or from endangered species. All Caspaia caviar is farm-raised. For the New York outpost interiors, Macron and Sinbahar have tapped French design titan Jacques Grange. Like the original, the ambiance in New York will be soft and old-world, with blue tablecloths, those mohair banquettes, and a copper bar. It will be the sexiest Caspaia we've ever made, Macron promises. My goal is to add to the energy and vibrancy of Upper Madison Avenue, says Sinbahar. Caviar Caspaia will be a great addition. I'm sure our guests and neighbors will embrace it and wonder, why didn't we have this before? Keziah Weir writes about books. Memory Palace. A writer recalls his formative relationship with Elizabeth Hardwick in 1970s New York. When the pandemic hit, the author and critic Daryl Pinkney tells me, this mood came on me to remember what felt at the time like a golden age. His resulting memoir, Come Back in September, out from FSG, recalls Pinckney's education under and friendship with Elizabeth Hardwick and Barbara Epstein, co-founders of the New York Review of Books, from taking Hardwick's 1973 writing class at Barnard through 1989, when he was regularly contributing to the review. The author, drawing from his diaries, offers a tender and unvarnished glimpse of two cultural milieux, his age mates, Lucy Santa, Sigrid Nunez, and that of Hardwick, Epstein, and Susan Sontag, the three stars of the great table of contents that was Manhattan, he writes. He name-dropped Hardwick to James Baldwin, was witness to her divorce from Robert Lowell, and absorbed the critiques and praise they all heaped on each other's writing. Listening to gossip about Adrienne Rich and Lillian Hellman, he hardly dared to join in the laughter, but he did write it all down. Six-pack, stories of siblings, star-crossed love, and more new fiction. The Passenger, published by Knopf. He is in love with his sister, writes Cormac McCarthy, in the first of two novels out this fall, this one focusing on a salvage diver dredging a mysteriously downed plane. But of course, it gets worse. Toad, published by MCD, from the late Catherine Dunn, author of Geek Love, the story of pensive recluse Sally Gunner as she looks back on her youth in the counterculture of 1960s Portland, Oregon. Flight, out from Mariner, assembling for the first Christmas since their mother's death, a set of adult siblings and their families unpack old wounds and vie over inheritance plans in Lynn Steger Strong's anticipated new novel. The Foghorn Echoes, published by Canongate, and Danny Ramadan's split narrative, following a tragedy the lives of two Syrian teens unfurl and diverge, Hussam as an out gay man in Vancouver, Wasir alone in Damascus. Now is not the time to panic, published by Echo. Kevin Wilson's big-hearted novel centers on a pair of Tennessee high schoolers whose small-town art prank gains national attention and a life of its own. Saha, published by Livewrite, a murder mystery unfolds against the backdrop of a dystopian class-based society in this strong sophomore novel from National Book Award finalist Cho Nam-ju. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.